Moses asked God, "Why are you taking the time and trouble to make such lovely letters? Just give us the information. You have a bunch of laws that you want us to keep. Print it up, and I'll report it to the people of Israel." And God responds, "In the future, there will be a man named Akiva ben Yosef who will deduce from every one of these letters, from one of these tiny crowns, tons and tons of exegetical insights." Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 108, The Death and Life of Rabbi Akiva. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. A moving article in the New York Times describes a letter written by a young man when he was serving in World War II. This letter was lost and not delivered. The man came home safe, married, raised a family, and ultimately passed away. And after that, the letter was found and delivered to his wife. The Times reports, quote, "Hi, was your husband in the service?" Ms. Gonzalez, 89, recalled the letter carrier's asked, saying, "Yes, he was," she answered. "But I didn't know him then." The letter carrier handed her an envelope. "Well, I'm pretty sure I have something that's personal for you," he said. Inside the envelope was an unopened airmail letter that her husband, John A. Gonzalez, had sent to his mother in Woburn, Massachusetts, when he was a 22-year-old Army sergeant serving in Germany, just after the end of World War II. In an interview on Friday, nearly a month after she opened the letter, Ms. Gonzalez recalled the flood of emotions she had felt as she read her husband's words, his neat cursive on faded paper in an envelope with a 6-cent stamp. "It was amazing," Ms. Gonzalez said. "I really felt like he was there with me." They met in 1949 when he gave her and her girlfriend a ride home from the shoe factory where they all worked in Woburn outside Boston. The couple married in 1953, raised 5 boys together, and were married for 61 years until Mr. Gonzalez died in 2015 at age 92. His letter had been discovered in a Pittsburgh postal facility, Ms. Gonzalez said, and had been delivered to her house on December 9th, along with a letter from the Postal Service, end quote. In other words, a letter from a late husband's younger self arrives, his letter suddenly bringing him back in a real way to someone who loved him so, who loves him so. As soon as I read this poignant, heartwarming article, I thought immediately of something my father had once commented to me, inspired by a Talmudic statement describing one of the books of the Bible as both a sefer, a book or scroll, as well as an igeret, a letter. The two forms of written media, my father said, involve different ways of connecting to the past. A sefer, a scroll or book, involves separation between the one reading and the content about which one reads. The reader is in the present. The events described are in the past. Hence the connection between the word sefer, book, and sipur, story. But in igeret, a letter is different. When one receives a letter, one is transported in an intimate way to the time and place in which the letter was written, to the person who wrote the letter. If, my father said, a biblical book is given these two appellations, it is because we can relate to the story therein in two ways. On the one hand, it is a book. We study it as a text, a sacred text. But it can also be an igeret, a letter, in the sense that when we read it, we are not only telling a tale from the distant past. We are transported back to the moments described therein, communing with its characters, as well as with the God who makes his providence known therein. We are there. A letter, in other words, has the ability to embody a personal connection. And for all the immediacy and convenience of email and text messaging today, we still need to ponder what we have lost, with handwritten correspondence disappearing to some extent from the scene. Yale Law School's Stephen L. Carter, in his book Civility, reflects that though today few write letters and human communication has become easier, that does not mean that it has necessarily become better. Before the explosion in communications technology, Carter writes, quote, "We had two means of keeping in touch with friends, stopping in for a visit or writing a letter. Each involved a significant investment of time and perhaps resources. In other words, maintaining friendships automatically called us to sacrifice. And by making those sacrifices, we showed our friends repeatedly how greatly we valued their friendship. Correspondence in particular not only preserved and nurtured a relationship, but provided a record of it, a testament to its enduring character," end quote. In other words, in an age in which we no longer communicate primarily through penmanship, all individuality of effort is lost. An email, no matter who it's from, is a hastily typed out bunch of bits and bytes in cyberspace with no personality and no tangible nature. A letter, on the other hand, a letter from someone special in his or her hand, painstakingly composed and lovingly written, becomes an embodiment of its author, a constant and concrete reminder of the beloved. And through a letter, a loved one continues to speak to us if we hearken to the letter's words carefully enough. It is with this in mind that we can consider one of the most painful and poignant accounts in the Talmud, describing the death of one of the most beloved rabbis in Jewish history at one of the worst moments in Jewish history. A story that articulates how this rabbi taught us to see the Torah and how his memory endures still. Following the defeat of Bar Kokhba's revolt, it was apparently in Caesarea, Caesarea, that the rabbinic supporter of the rebellion, Rabbi Akiva, was executed. As the Talmud describes, he was essentially tortured to death, his flesh raked with iron combs. But Rabbi Akiva is famous not only for his death, but also for his life, and for his method of Torah study, deducing new insights from every seemingly redundant word, letter, or part of a letter, seeing those apparent redundancies as a hint to a new idea to be derived. This is brought to life in a moving tale in the Talmud, in a story that is not meant to be literal, but rather filled with sublime symbolism and meaningful metaphor. The Talmud describes Moses ascending up to God to receive the Torah and finding the Almighty sitting as a scribe, slowly writing out the letters of the sacred scripture, carefully and painstakingly attaching tagim, little lines or crowns, on top of the letters, one by one. Moses asks God, "Who is forcing you to do this?" In other words, why are you taking the time and trouble to make such lovely letters? Just give us the information. You have a bunch of laws that you want us to keep. Print it up, and I'll report it to the people of Israel. And God responds, "In the future, there will be a man named Akiva ben Yosef, who will deduce from every one of these letters, from every one of these tiny tagim, from one of these tiny crowns, tilei tilim shal halachot, tons and tons of exegetical insights." Moses, we are told, is then shown the future, in which he witnesses a lecture delivered by Akiva and is so overcome at the brilliance of this man that he asks the Almighty why he, Moses, had been chosen as the deliverer of God's law when such a man as Akiva could have been selected. To this, God in the tale responds, "Be quiet. Kach ala b'machshava lefanai. So it has emerged in my thought before me," meaning, "This is what I decreed." To this, Moses responds, "You have shown me Akiva's Torah, show me his reward." He then sees Rabbi Akiva's flesh torn apart, and Moses poignantly and painfully exclaims, "Zo Torah v'zo schara. This is the Torah and its reward." And again, God gives no answer except a reference to his will. The point of the first part of this story, of God as scribe, of Rabbi Akiva learning from the letters that the Almighty painstakingly writes out, is that for Rabbi Akiva, God, upon giving us the Torah, wanted us, yes, to obey his laws, but also to see the Torah itself as more than a series of directives. The Torah, the Talmud is trying to tell us, is a letter by the Almighty to us. It is his carefully crafted correspondence, his labor of love. And it's with this in mind that we can fully appreciate the Almighty's answer to Moses. Like a letter from a loved one, every single one of these letters in the Torah, every little line on those letters, would be treasured by Akiva and treated with enormous significance. And he, in turn, would teach the Jews, inspire the Jews, to see the Torah in the same way. Thus, for the Jewish people throughout its history, the Torah was not a text message or email that was hastily scrolled through or skimmed. The Jews pored over the Torah day after day, year after year, millennia after millennia, with new exegetical insights gleaned, new deductions discovered, because they saw it as a treasured correspondence from a beloved. And just as a beloved speaks to us through a letter, God, the Jews believed, speaks to us through the Torah, teaching us new insights from generation to generation. This, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks once commented, is the meaning of the biblical description of God's voice appearing as a kol demama daka, a still sound of silence. When one reads a letter from a beloved, the voice, however silent it may seem, of the letter writer can be heard. And it is Rabbi Akiva who inspired his people to see the Torah in this way. In the end, Rabbi Akiva's Torah never left us, and the way he saw the Torah never left us. So that even after the rebellion was defeated, the voice of God was heard and felt by Jews as they learned the letter that was God's Torah. The Times article describing the reaction of a wife to receiving a letter from her beloved husband from the past continues in the following passage, quote, "Ms. Gonzalez said that she missed her husband and that the letter reflected how much he had loved his family and worried about them, even when he was serving overseas. It was just so nice that he cared so much about all of them, because that's the way he was," she said. "I could have sworn I felt his presence here while I was reading the letter, honestly and truly, which is strange, but that's how I felt," end quote. I don't think it's strange at all. We are blessed with a letter from one with whom we can connect at any time and feel his love at any time. And this, in the end, sustained Rabbi Akiva as well. For the Talmud further tells us that as Rabbi Akiva died, it was the moment in the day reserved for the morning recital of the Shema, which contains the words, "V'yahavta et Hashem Elokecha, b'chol levavcha u'b'chol nafshecha," and "thou shalt love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul." As he died, Rabbi Akiva explained to his students that he rejoiced in the opportunity to express his own love for God at the moment that his soul was taken. Rabbi Akiva was never able to say these words, for according to the story, he only uttered the Shema's first verse, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." As with the word one, echad, his soul left his body. But Akiva's love for God and his feeling of God's love for him did not need further verbal expression, for it resounds through the centuries in a people that remembers his approach to the Torah as well as the circumstances of his last breaths. Rabbi Akiva's is perhaps the most remembered death in rabbinic literature, but even more famous is his life and all he lived for. And it is in every study hall, and indeed in every moment of faith and Torah learning in Jewish history since he lived, that Rabbi Akiva lives still. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.